There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is The Reconnect. We're here to speak the truth on the real issues of the day in real time. So how do we do that? How do we get God back into the conversation? How do we get God back into every conversation? Okay, so in addition to this radio program, which you can obviously go and grab as a podcast, and we draw pieces out of it and expand them online at reconnectwithcarmen.com, there's also now a book. And so if you want to pre-order the book, Speak the Truth, How to Bring God Back into Every Conversation, you can do that at reconnectwithcarmen.com as well. All right. So while you're at the website, sign up for our email newsletter. We will send out information to you that we don't have time to share here in the hour on the air. You can also connect with The Reconnect on Facebook, and you can always let me know what you're thinking about. I'm on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. All right, friends, it is now a whole week during which we have been talking about one storm. That storm is Harvey, and it continues to be a problem maker and a rain maker and a flood maker and a disaster maker, not just in Texas and Louisiana, but now in Alabama and Tennessee. And so the waters are continuing to rise, actually, in three rivers in Houston. The waters are continuing to rise in Middle Tennessee and several rivers around the Nashville area. And I just heard this morning that the Houston Independent School District, which is one of the largest in the country, is postponing the opening of school until September the 11th. And so anybody who thought their kids would be going back to school maybe just after Labor Day, obviously that won't be happening. And so there's a good news, bad news element to that. Obviously, kids need normalization as fast as possible, but kids also can't be expected to be bused on roads that are damaged or in school buses that obviously now need to be replaced, or into buildings which are damaged by floods. And so there's 200 school buildings that have been damaged just in the Houston Independent School District by this flood event. Now, let's keep in mind that we're also talking about all of southeastern Texas, and now we're talking about all of East Texas. And so the water is still rising in Beaumont, where they have now begun to evacuate the shelters where they had actually evacuated people into. They're now evacuating those shelters because the city has two water pumping stations 10 miles apart, and they are both completely underwater. And therefore, the water has now been shut off in the city of Beaumont. So you're talking about a different kind of challenge being faced in different parts of the country in terms of hurricane, then tropical storm, now tropical depression, Harvey. I got to tell you, we should have just stuck with depression, because Hurricane Harvey's a little bit depressing for everybody at this point. The infrastructure that has been damaged, you're talking about things like one of the largest refineries and pipelines in the country in terms of how we get our gas. And so if you woke up on the East Coast this morning and you're driving around and you thought you were going to fill up your gas tank, it's going to cost you 30 cents a gallon more than it cost you yesterday. Why is that? Well, there is a refinery in Port Aransas that is literally underwater. And it is that pipeline through which we actually everywhere in the East Coast get our gasoline. And so you're going to see an immediate spike in things like airline tickets, because they are going to have to anticipate a rise in their fuel costs as well. So this storm, this flood is going to have ripple effects into all of our lives. Yes, there are 10 million people directly affected at this point, but many, many more indirectly affected. In fact, I would say all of us. When we talk about the damage to infrastructures, you have to remember we're talking about power grids and roads and bridges. We're talking about schools. We're talking about churches and hospitals. And so the big question this morning, on the 1st of September, a lot of people are asking the question, did I get paid yesterday? All right. I'm an hourly wage person. Did the amount of money that I'm used to getting dropped into my bank account get dropped into my bank account yesterday? And if it didn't, what do I do now? This is a new month. And so that mortgage company, that bank, is expecting me to make a mortgage payment on a piece of property that on a house that may not even be there anymore. If you live in let's say, Victoria or all points southeast of Victoria. And what if your house is completely flooded? You expected to continue to make your mortgage payments? Let me let you know right now, you are, right? So here's the challenge people are facing. They may or may not be getting paid by their employer. If they own rental property, they may or may not, very likely not, going to be paid by their renters, all of whom would be expected to start paying rent today, right? And so the ripple effect of this kind of devastating storm is really hard to imagine. And now, as soon as we talk about all that, we talk about all of these people who are currently in shelters, and we're talking about tens of thousands of people now in shelters, then immediately you and I start thinking, well, what's the next step of housing for them? That's a whole new subject matter area that we're going to get into next week as we begin to examine where these people go next, because they cannot go back to the places where they once lived. And so what do they go forward into? And you say, well, they should just go into other places that are available for rent in the Houston area. Well, here's the problem. It's not that there's a lack of money in FEMA to pay for people to be put into rental housing. The problem is an actual lack of structures. There is no extra housing available at the income level that we're talking about. So all of those things we're going to get into, and certainly the health-related issues. I mean, the mess that exists and the disease that comes with a flood is something that we'll talk about beginning next week. I did read this morning from Houston's Health Department Administrator that there is actually no need to test the water. No need to test the water, he was asked. He said, well, yes, there's no question it's contaminated. And the question in response was, with what? And he almost with this, like, it's like a half smile and this half like horrified, depressed look. He says millions of different contaminants. And so you got to imagine you've been watching people on your TV walk around in that water. Any sort of little minor cut that they might have from anything is an entry point for all kinds of the millions of contaminants that are in that water. So we are going to be talking for weeks and months and maybe years about the heroic response to this hurricane and this weather event and the floods that are related to it. But today, we actually just want to talk specifically about the response of one Christian denomination, and we want to do that right now with Mary Bates. So joining us today is Mary Bates. Mary is the National Director and Disaster Coordinator for the North American Lutheran Church. You can find out about their response at thenalc.org/disaster-response. Mary, welcome to the Reconnect.
Thank you so much, Carmen.
So I know you are in Houston. Give us an update on the situation as you have experienced it.
It has been a number of years since I have seen this much devastation. Through 20 years of responding to disasters, even though this storm was anticipated, it built up so quickly and became so powerful overnight from a Category 3 to a Category 4 hurricane that it was underestimated. The force of the winds, the force of the waters, and in the Houston area, there are three rivers that are still rising. They crested actually yesterday. They were very slow to rise, and they are very slow to go down. And there are thousands of people being evacuated as we speak. Our local jurisdiction is trying to get them to safe areas and be able to maintain their lives.
So, Mary, in terms of the response of denominations like the North American Lutheran Church, talk with us about the coordination of efforts between, you know, the church and the government and others when things like this happen. I think it's hopeful to people when we can talk about the level of coordination between these major institutions.
And I think it's important to note that what FEMA does very, very well. And they are really about making sure that the infrastructure and these families are as safe as possible. The American Red Cross has set up shelters. And it's the faith-based organizations like the North American Lutheran Church that come in and help these families and fill in those gaps where it's just not possible for the government to meet all needs. So as we look at what some of those needs are, when I visited Portland and Rockport, where Vice President Pence was yesterday, our Lutheran church is not able to hold worship services. The entire community is without power for at least 4 weeks. Our pastor's home is destroyed. Not only that, but all the other churches, all the other organizations, social service agencies that people assume are going to be there for them, they are no longer there. And it's important that through the volunteer coordination of all the faith-based organizations that we work together, that we do not duplicate our efforts. There's so much need. There's just not enough resources to go around. And so it's important that we don't duplicate. So I really appreciate the opportunity to get that message out that anyone able to volunteer or to donate needs to go online and identify one of the agencies that they know is providing 100% of their resources to these thousands and millions of families in need.
So, Mary, for your part, what's the best place online that you would direct people to go if they either want to volunteer or have resources to contribute?
www.thenalc.org has information on how to donate and how to volunteer. I have set up 3 volunteer centers for housing with showers for volunteers coming into the area. We also have 4 donation centers where we are distributing bottled water, non-perishable food, personal hygiene items, baby food, pet food, but most importantly, cleaning supplies. We have what we call flood buckets, and we're distributing all kinds of rakes and shovels, garden hoses, cleaning supplies, just to help these families start cleaning up some of the mud and some of the debris and in their homes.
It's actually hard for people to imagine what it's like to literally only have the clothing on your back. And that you.
And Carmen, One of the saddest things that's happening is I've been meeting with families returning down onto the coast to the permanent homes. And there was one lady who, as we were meeting and starting to work on our pastor's house, she says, "Oh, I can't wait to get back home." And when she gave me the address, I found out the home is no longer there. It is completely destroyed. And she assumed after she evacuated that she would be able to come back home, clean up, and move back in. There is no home for her and her family to come back to. And so we've made a commitment to help them rebuild.
So, friends, as you're listening today, just, you know, recognize, and we've been talking about this all week, that there are these material needs that our neighbors now have, and we want to be responsive to those material needs. But when we talk about the response of organizations like the North American Lutheran Church, which you can find at thenalc.org, we're also talking about meeting people's spiritual needs. This is not just an experience of material disaster. A person who thought they were going to have a home, assumed they were going to have a home to return to, and suddenly finds themselves literally utterly homeless with every item that they thought they owned is now, you know, a part of a great flood. There are material needs, but there are also very deep spiritual needs. And we all know that there are spiritual answers to those questions about where our home really is and where our treasure really lies. But it's only going to be people of faith who are going to bring that messaging into the conversation. So Mary, we want to thank you for what you're doing. We want to thank you for the witness of the North American Lutheran Church in this disaster response. And we want to encourage people, if they want to volunteer or they have material resources to donate, they can do so at thenalc.org. Mary, thanks for joining us today on The Reconnect. All right. So one of the stories that I got to talk with Mary about that you didn't get to hear on the air was actually the story of the Ethiopian church that is a part of the North American Lutheran Church there in Houston, Texas. The church is completely lost, and the pastor has lost his secondary job, the job that actually, you know, pays the bills. Obviously, serving an Ethiopian church in Houston is not a paying gig, certainly not at the level to support a family. So he has not only lost his church, the physical location of the church, he has lost his job, and he's lost his home. The apartment complex that he lives in is considered a total loss. And so we want to be praying today for the pastor of the Oromo Church in Houston, Texas, a church affiliated with the North American Lutheran Church. We want to pray for them, but we also want to be intentionally focused on people who don't live in the kind of neighborhood that maybe you live in. They don't live on high ground. And maybe they even lived fairly high up in an apartment, but that apartment building is now closed. They can't go back. There's no home to go back to. Nearly every member of the Oromo Church lived in an apartment that is now underwater. And so we want to be praying for these Ethiopian brothers and sisters who are residents of Houston, Texas, who are members of and participate in the Oromo Church. If you want to specifically support the recovery of that particular congregation, when you donate to the NALC.org on their disaster response website, all you have to do is somewhere indicate that you want your help to go to the Oromo Church, and that is spelled O-R-O-M-O. All right, friends, we had a conversation earlier this week with the Southern Baptists about their response. You can check that out, what they're up to at NAMB, that's North American Mission Board.net. And what you're looking for is Send Relief. And we've also talked this week with Jeremiah Johnston about his personal experience being evacuated with his family of seven from the flood and the impact on him related to that. Okay, friends, this is actually not the only news story going on. It's not the only thing in the world that we ought to be talking about. This is going to be a long holiday weekend, but there's a lot of people living with a lot of stress on this holiday weekend, not just related to this storm and recovery from it, which, by the way, if you've got free time this holiday weekend and you've got a muck bucket and you just want to go down and you got to take care of yourself, you got to remember that. But if you want to go down and help muck out houses, that process has started. Okay, but by Tuesday, President Trump and his administration need to take action on DACA, the Deferred Action Childhood Arrival immigration stopgap measure that was put in place by the Obama administration. So when they put that in place, 800,000 people across our country raised their hand and said, they came out of the shadows, they raised their hand, they said, hey, look, I came to the United States as a child, but I'm technically here, you know, illegally, right? So they raised their hands, they've identified themselves, we now know who they are, and now the DACA program, that Deferred Action Childhood Arrival program, is, it's being held in the balance in terms of the politics that currently exist in the United States of America. That's probably the best way to say that. So I'm going to direct you to the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable. So the Evangelical Immigration Table is a group of people that includes the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church, the National Association of Evangelicals, Korean churches in our country, National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, the Wesleyan Church, World Relief, and others. They actually have at evangelicalimmigrationtable.com information about the Dreamers, information about this group of people that we call Dreamers that are currently at risk of deportation if the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program comes abruptly to an end. So it is a tremendously complex issue. It begs for a legislative solution, and it demands leadership on Capitol Hill. And so if you are a person who wants to pull the lever of influence that you have today with a member of Congress, I would encourage you to go and get equipped at evangelicalimmigrationtable.com. You can look for the Dreamer letter. You can sign it if you want to. There's a press statement there as well from the Evangelical Immigration Table leaders. And you at least need to be aware that this is going on, and you at least need to have a distinctively Christian response to it. Okay? This is actually not just a political issue. This is about being human, and this is about treating people with humanity. So we are not talking here about adults who made a conscious decision to take an illegal act and cross into the United States. We're talking about people who were brought here as children. This is where they have grown up. This is where they have been educated. This is the only culture that they know. This is, in many cases, the only language that they speak. And we're talking about the possibility of deporting them, nearly a million of them, back to countries that they have some relationship to in terms of their genetic code. It happens to be where they were born, but it is not, in fact, who they are. So get up to speed on DACA and the Dreamers in your own community. And certainly what the evangelical immigration table is saying about these things, if you would like to participate in bringing the Christian witness to bear on this particular political issue. All right, friends, sometimes a tweet crosses my feed that I simply cannot ignore. And so this is our Speak the Truth segment today. And we just do these periodically. It's just a really brief opportunity for me to say, okay, here is something very specific in the culture that you need to be able to speak the truth on. It's a real issue. You need to be able to speak the truth on it in real time. And so it's not like there's some long expanded resource on this subject. What we're saying is, hey, I saw this tweet, and I recognize that this is something I need to respond to. What is my distinctively Christian response to something like this? So here it is. It's a Rachel Held Evans tweet, and she says, "Be wary when religious leaders say, quote, you can't trust your emotions, end quote. Often what they really mean is ignore your conscience and obey." Speaking the truth on this real issue in real time, let me just say this. Your emotions are a terrible barometer of truth. And so if you're going to trust your emotions, you need to ask yourself, are my emotions aligned with the truth? And the truth is that which aligns with reality. And the reality is the God who created us has also spoken. And if there is a God and he has spoken, then what he has said should really matter. And if there is a God and he has spoken and that revelation is in scripture of the Old and New Testaments, then what God has said there specifically in that book and how we are to integrate that truth into our lives actually matters. That is actually how our conscience is formed and reformed. So you can only trust your conscience insofar as your conscience is guided by the Holy Spirit of the living God. You can only trust your conscience insofar as your conscience is actually captive to Jesus Christ. So let conscience be your guide, yes, insofar as your conscience is actually Christ-conformed and Holy Spirit-led. So do not ignore your conscience. But yes, obey, trust and obey, not your emotions, but your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. All right, friends, when we come back in the second half, we're going to be having what I would consider a fairly mature conversation with Dean and Sarah. And so if you're a person who has little ears with you, you're going to want to listen to the second half of the program today via podcast, which you can find at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Now, there at reconnectwithcarmen.com, you can actually access not only today's program and share it with someone else, but you could pre-order Speak the Truth, which is it's my first book, and so it's our latest book, Speak the Truth, How to Bring God Back into Every Conversation. It's available for pre-order now at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Friends, this is a listener-supported ministry by people just like you, which means that in order for us to share with you every day the Reconnect with Carmen, and in order for us to share Reconnect One, which is a one-minute commentary that airs across the country on about 450 radio stations, and in order for us to bring resources to you online at reconnectwithcarmen.com, we need reconnectors. Reconnectors are ministry partners who partner with us prayerfully and financially to not only, you know, keep us on the air every day, but actually expand the reach of the ministry to more and more people. So we'd love it if you would join us as a ministry partner. I'd also just love to get your feedback. The easiest places to give me feedback are either at the website, reconnectwithcarmen.com, or via Facebook. You can connect with the Reconnect on Facebook and on Twitter. I am always available to you at Carmen LaBerge. All right, friends, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a what I'm going to describe as a mature conversation with Dean and Sarah about how to talk with your kids about all of the sexual orientation, gender identity issues in the culture today, because they are facing those issues in school and with their friends, and we need to equip them to do that in ways that not only honor Jesus, but in ways that are compassionate. So how do you teach your kids to be people of Christian conviction, but also full of compassion in a world that is deeply, deeply confused about issues related to identity? This is The Reconnect. Check it out online at reconnectwithcarmen.com, and I'll be right back.
All the misfit heroes you chose tell me there's hope for sinners lost.
Hey friends, I'm Carmen LaBerge. This is The Reconnect. We are putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about, equipping you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. And one of those kingdoms is the kingdom of your own home. And so the conversation that we're going to have now with Dean and Sarah is what I would consider a conversation among adults about mature things. We certainly want to equip you to have conversations with your children about this subject matter related to sexual orientation and gender identity. But we want you to have those conversations with your kids. We don't necessarily want them to overhear the one we're having. So you may want to grab this particular part of the show via podcast at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there at the website, we invite you to sign up for our email newsletter, and you can also check out additional stuff that we're doing on Facebook at The Reconnect, and you can communicate with me on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBerge. All right, friends, I had the opportunity to catch up in conversation with Dean and Sarah about how we talk with our kids about the subject matter of the day. All right, friends, I'm excited to be joined here today by Dean and Sarah. He is the founding and lead pastor of City Church in Tallahassee, Florida. He's passionate about reaching the city of Tallahassee with the gospel in order to see a worldwide impact made for Jesus. He's a graduate of Liberty University with an MA in Theological Studies. He's an advisory member of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission's Leadership Council. And he gave a talk at the ERLC's national conference called The Problem of Porn: Gospel Hope for Parents and Teens. He also participated in a panel discussion about how to talk with your kids about gender and sexuality issues. You can find out more about Dean at citychurchtallahassee.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Dean and Sarah, and that's spelled I-N-S-E-R-R-A. Dean, welcome to The Reconnect.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So let's start with the porn and parenting conversation. Let's just jump into that subject matter. When we start talking about the challenges that parents face today, parents who are Christians, and they really do want to protect their kids the best they can, but they want to prepare their kids as well. Talk with us about the reality of pornography in our culture.
Well, I believe that Christian parents are doing a very good job protecting their kids, but not a great job preparing their kids, because pornography is coming at them. They don't have to go look for it. It is coming right to their mobile devices. And I've realized that a lot of our protections, and again, I want to compliment parents for saying, fantastic job being serious about filters on phones, monitoring social media. I know families won't let their children bring their phones in their rooms at night once they go to sleep. I want to say bravo and encourage parents on those things. But those things, while we should, yes, keep doing them, only work in our homes. They don't work once our kids leave our home, especially teenagers, when they had their own cars, they're going to a friend's home, when they're in the football locker room at their high school, when they're with friends whose parents don't have the same oversights that we might have. And the other reality that's pretty humbling is when they're more tech savvy than any of us are, being the next generation, that yes, in our homes we have a responsibility, but is it going to work when they leave our homes? So it has to go beyond just protection. We have to learn how to prepare.
Okay, and how do we do that?
And again, it's not foolproof, but there are definitely some principles that I believe need to be in place. One, we need to first see that we're to be sending our kids into the world, and we don't want our kids to resemble the world, or we don't want them to be removed from the world. Jesus prayed, I don't want you to take the believers out of the world, but protect them while they're in it. So I think the first answer is our job is not to put an ironclad wall around our homes when it comes to this issue. And we're to the point with pornography where prevention's impossible in the real world, we have to teach them how to live in a porn-saturated society, but to live distinct lives in it. So where I think preparation begins, one is with the environments we create in our home. And I am a strong advocate that I believe that creating a high view in your home of the opposite sex, especially when it comes to how males view females. In our home, with the biggest rule, if you had to talk to my boys right now and you ask them, what's the number one rule in your house? They would immediately tell you, without hesitation, we have to respect our mom. It's just a big deal in our house. That doesn't mean I think my wife is weak. That doesn't mean any of those kind of things at all. It means that I want my boys to have the highest view of women as possible. They can go after each other, but they go after my daughter, they're in huge trouble. Not that she can't, you know, have her own conversations. I'm not trying to say she's weak. I just want them in their minds to see that she is different. And by different, I mean by design. Because when we lose gender distinctiveness, which is happening all across our culture, then it does away with any outrage over women being treated as objects. Because how can we be outraged about women being seen as objects when now the world's telling us there's no difference or distinction in gender? Then you're left with the only value being that as long as someone's consenting, that's the only value that's left. And that might go away one day too, because people might say that folks are just acting out their animal instincts. Who knows where the world's going to go with all these type of things? But I think environment really matters. And again, it's not foolproof, but I believe that the stronger that children, young boys especially, are raised with a very high view of women, that then they're going to be teenagers who respect women. And then we're also honest with them in that environments we're creating, in the preparation, that this is a real thing in the real world. It's not a taboo subject in our homes anymore. We have to talk about it. It's not one of those whisper conversations you have that's just like a once a year, you know, father, son, go sit down and have the talk. The talk needs to go away. We need to have talking that continues, where we're just aware this is a reality in our culture. Like this is not going away. It's only going to get worse.
Are there times with your boys, and how old are they? So we can kind of get a little bit of context here.
I have a fifth grader who's 11, and I have a first grader who's 7.
Okay, so we're not talking about teenagers yet.
No, we're a year away from middle school with my oldest.
Yeah. So when you are talking about preparing them, and you're talking about the realities of the real world, are there ever times that you kind of point out to them what the world is doing, what they're seeing, what's in front of them, and say, you know, that's not, God does not like that?
Yes, I think the best kind of discipleship for children and for life in general is what I call discipleship as you go. So some families are very formal about it. They have family worship. I think all that's wonderful. They have family devotion time. I think that's great. We do some of that. We're more discipleship as you go, where we're constantly pointing out things, constantly having conversations, that which creates them asking conversations. And also we give reasons behind things. Like something that's going to sound strange, but my boys and I, we love wrestling. Like WWE wrestling, just love it. And that's kind of our thing we do when we watch the pay-per-views and we, you know, watch Monday Night Raw and the big, they love it. And I grew up watching it. We love it. But there's a part of Monday Night Raw every week that has the female wrestling, and they come out in, you know, in not much clothes, and they're rolling all over the ground. I don't want to be TMI and give visuals here, but they're rolling all over the ground and doing things that really, I don't think a Christian male should be watching. So when we know it's coming, even before it happens, they announce that the next match is going to be, we turn the channel. And they know we're going to turn the channel. And they anticipate we're turning the channel. They go, oh, women's match, we need to turn it. And that sounds strange. And some people might disagree. That's watching wrestling. That's fine. You can email me or whatever. But I just want my boys to see that this is a thing. That this matters. That we're not going to look at women that way. So something as simple as turning the channel in wrestling during that time is allowing them to see that, okay, this is a big deal. That the way what we view matters. Like what our eyes see really matters. Mm-hmm. And they can be watching any kind of show, any kind of movie, and I'll comment, I'll chime in, I'll say, hey guys, let's turn it, that's not a good idea. So that as you go discipleship, or just pointing things out along the way, to me is really important.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Hey, we're talking to Dean and Sarah. He is the founding and lead pastor of City Church in Tallahassee, Florida. You can visit them online at citychurchtallahassee.com. You can follow Dean on Twitter. He's actually a really fun follow on Twitter, at Dean and Sarah, and that's spelled I-N-S-E-R-R-A. So when we talk about preparing kids for the kinds of things that they're going to encounter. Pornography is, as you say, it's coming at them. It's not avoidable. I think the other thing that's coming at our kids that we certainly did not deal with when we were their age are all of the gender and sexuality issues, which you've alluded to. I mean, you've alluded to the fact that in our culture, there is a tearing down of the distinctions between men and women. And there's also a building up of a lie related to the mutability of gender. Like a person could go to kindergarten as a boy and the next year come to first grade as a girl. Talk with us. I know that because I've heard you talk about it in another environment, I know that this is a reality that you all have already encountered in terms of the friends of kids. And so talk with us about how, as a parent, you negotiate that terrain.
Yeah, well, I was out of town and my wife called me and said that my son, who's in fourth grade at the time last year, was told by a friend in his class that his friend is transgender. He actually, on the playground, said that I'm part of the LGBT community. And my son responded by saying, what is that? And he knew what it meant to be gay. He knew what homosexuality was, because I've taught them, you know, I've explained to him the reality of that existence. But we never talked about transgender. I guess I was just behind. It just wasn't on my radar for him yet. And this is a suburban school, you know, in a Bible Belt-ish kind of town. And he explained to me he's transgender, that I was born a female, but now I am a boy. And I had heard a rumor that was true, but it just one of those things that it was like, oh, no, that's not true. To the point where his teacher didn't even know. And my wife calls me and says, something happened today at school and Tommy came home asking a lot of questions and you need to get home pretty quick because we're going to have to handle this. My wife's perfectly capable of handling it. She started the conversation. And when I came home that next day, we went for a walk and we just talked about the entire idea of gender, about why it matters, about how God created us male and female, about why that's a big deal, about how through the scriptural storyline that Jesus and the Apostle Paul both affirmed Adam and Eve as historic people. That they affirmed the creation narrative as well. And then we turned it very quickly, because I don't want to just raise children that are right on culture issues. I want to raise children who are impacting the culture, and we can't impact a culture apart from love. So I told him, I said, hey, this is really important. I said, we're going to be clear on this, but my goal for my kids is, when it comes to these issues, is compassion and clarity. And I think those two words really matter. So I told him, I said, here's the deal. I said, your friend yesterday, before you found out about this, is still your friend tomorrow. Like nothing changes. If you were sitting by each other in the cafeteria and you were playing on the playground together and you were, you know, talking in the media center together and walking in line together, that doesn't have to stop because you have this information. This is the same person they were yesterday. At the same time, I said, we got to have clarity on this issue. And your friend, no matter how they dress, no matter what they do with their hair, no matter what they want to be identified by, no matter what their name is, your friend is a girl. Your friend was born a girl. God does not make mistakes. God created your friend to be a girl. As far as the name, and people can, I think Christians can differ on this, as far as what name the person chooses, I think a name's a name. And if it's a loving thing to call your friend the name they want to go by, I have no problem with that. But in our home, we're going to call your friend the name that your friend chooses to go by, but your friend is a girl. And that's reality. So we want to have compassion. Nothing changes relationally. We need to be friends, not making fun of. Don't whisper about it everywhere. We don't need to talk bad about this person. And also realize this person has probably a lot going on. And we came to find out, like you talked about kindergarten to first grade, that at this exact same school, this child as a first grader had a different name and was a female at the school. Biological female, went by female name. And then by the time this child was in fourth grade, had fully transitioned. In their eye, to the point where even their birth certificate was changed to a boy. I didn't even know you could do that. So all these things are happening, coming at us at once. And here we are a mile from our house in the suburbs of Tallahassee, and this is what's taking place. So we can freak out, or we can sound the culture warrior alarm, and we can do all those things. We can go, okay, how about this? What if we're raising children that have compassion on the issue? This is very complex. There's a lot of emotions involved. People just deeply embedded personal issue. And at the same time, what if we're really clear and help our children see that, no, your friend is a girl and nothing can change that. Nothing can change that. but your friendship doesn't have to change either.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about it ever since. And it's almost, I just want to encourage parents out there that it's almost been like where I have to change the conversation sometimes, because my son wants to talk about it all the time because he's fascinated by it. Because in his mind, he's going, how can this happen? How can this be real? How is this true? And now that the friend told my son, the friend is comfortable talking about it now. So here's my innocent fifth grade boy going to school every day and having to engage in a transgender conversation. But yeah. I don't know the limits to that. And we're still trying to figure that out as a family. Like, how much of that conversation is too much for an 11-year-old? But I am trying to parent kids to live in the world not as I want it to be, but as it is. And there's only going to be more of that. So I think we have to make sure that we're ready to have those conversations and not freak out when they come, because they are coming and more are going to happen. If in the suburbs of Tallahassee, Florida, an A-rated school, normal everyday school, that if that's happening there, it's going to happen anywhere.
Yeah. All right, folks, this conversation is with Dean and Sarah. He's the founding and lead pastor of City Church in Tallahassee, Florida. If you want to communicate with him, you can do so through the citychurchtallahassee.com website or on Twitter at Dean and Sarah. Dean, this willingness to talk with folks who have varying perspectives, this willingness on your part to have perfect clarity in terms of what the scripture says and who God is and what God wants, and yet a deep level of compassion for people, means that you are also invited into conversations, let's say, with the LGBT advocacy media that others might not be willing to take interviews with. Tell me what those conversations look like and why Christians who are very clear on the issues but also have compassion and are able to have those conversations, tell us why we should be talking across that particular aisle or boundary or whatever it is in our culture.
Yeah, well, if we're going to shine our lights, we need to go to where it's dark. And I believe the area of gender and family and sexuality right now are some of our darkest places, which so much people who are just wounded, and there's just so much confusion and so much hurt, anger, all the above when it comes to especially in the LGBT community right now. So I was in a conversation recently, and one thing that I learned very quickly from the conversation was that a common belief in sort of the LGBT circles, and by circles I mean more people who are influencers, who are in leadership, who are advocates, more than they're just practicing, but more on the front lines of their agenda and discussion, is that Christians are scared of them. And of course, the bigot words can get thrown out sometimes, oftentimes. No one wants to be called a bigot. I mean, who wants to be called a bigot? And that's a hard thing for our children as well, is when you're teaching children to believe in biblical marriage, when you're teaching children to believe that this is a man and this is a woman, and then they're called a bigot just because of basic Christian belief. I mean, who wants to be called a bigot? I'm 36 years old. I don't want to be called a bigot. A 16-year-old's not going to want to be called a bigot. And when they're being linked because their views on biblical marriage, the equivalence of a KKK member, this is really complicated. We believe they're two very different things. So one way to realize that we're not going to be able to win on the side of making it pleasing, making it sound better than it is, making us sound like we're for something different than we are. We're just not going to win on that. So we can try to make it as smooth or as cool or as, you know, compassionate as we possibly can. And that's not going to change the idea that at the core, people who think that to not accept their lifestyle is to not accept them is going to always result in, at the worst, you being called a bigot. And on your best day, you're going to be called misinformed, brainwashed, crazy, something like that. So I've learned that lately, that there's just a belief that we are scared, that there's some kind of fear. Maybe that's where the words homophobia and transphobia come from. And we have to communicate to this community that that's not true, and that we're going to prove it to you. That we might disagree strongly, but we're going to prove to you that we can love you as a person without accepting what you how you live. Now, you might say that's impossible. If you don't accept me, then you can't love me. And our response seems to be, we're going to prove you the opposite. We're going to love you right through it. We're going to be your friend right through it. Like I told my son with a transgender issue, friend yesterday, friend tomorrow, nothing's going to change. I heard Sam Alberry, the author and theologian, recently at the RLC National Conference, say that the same is true with our children. If you're my son yesterday, you're my son tomorrow, regardless of what you tell me, regardless of what sins you confess to me. And I think we have to bring the exact same thing, compassion and clarity, into those sort of conversations. I sat across the table from an LGBT advocate just recently, it was just the two of us, And the person asked me, so do you think I'm a sinner? And it's easy to blog about that. It's different to sit across a table from someone when they ask you that question. Same time, what a moment to have an opportunity to have a conversation. And I told her, I said, yes, I do. But your LGBT position is the least of the reasons of why I think that, because it goes way back before this. Now, do I think that's a sin as well, practicing that? Yes, I do. But that's not what I want to focus on right now. And I had a chance to walk through God's design and how we have strayed from God's design, not because of LGBT issues, just because of human sin in general and what that looks like, what it means to be restored to Christ. So with gotcha questions, I had a chance just to infiltrate gospel conversations into that. Because we're trying to win an argument. We're not going to reach people. Now, there are arguments that the Bible makes. You know, we're to give an answer for the hope that we have. You know, we're to correct, rebuke, and encourage, all of those things. So it's not that arguments is bad, but if our goal is just to win an argument, and I get worried about that. A lot of Christian conversation today is really trying to use war language. And like, is the Great Commission a culture war? I just don't know if it is. I think the Great Commission is a disciple-making war in the culture. And that's different than declaring war on the very same people that Jesus came to die for. So in those conversations, I just think that we have to be unafraid to have them. We have to know going in that it is not going to be pretty. It might not be argumentative, but it's not going to be pretty. And that the world is being so conditioned right now to equate believing differently about sexuality than the culture is telling us, trying to equate that with something like we saw in Charlottesville recently.
Yeah.
That's a scary place to be for a Christian.
It is.
Where belief in biblical marriage equates you with hatred and bigotry. And then we're raising kids now in that world.
Yeah.
And so that's, we have to overcome that and not be afraid of that and plow through that and prove people wrong.
Well, I'm glad you are, in not only the ministry that you're in and in the position that you're in to speak to not just these issues. Like, I really appreciate that you talk to people. Like, where you're not talking about issues, you're talking about people. And I think that that is the gospel. That's the gospel reality. Jesus didn't talk to issues or talk about issues. He talked to people as Christ. So, folks, that is all the time we have got to have with Dean today. But I'm sure we will have the opportunity to talk with him again. And again, it's Dean and Sarah. You can follow him on Twitter at Dean and Sarah. And you can check it all out at citychurchtallahassee.com. Hey, Dean, thanks for joining us today on The Reconnect.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the work that you're doing.
All right, friends, now it's time for our Below the Fold. This is the point in the show where we lift up a story and make a connection. It initially may not appear to be about God, but it's an opportunity for you to bring God into the conversation of the day. And so today's Below the Fold is literally what I'm calling the two-minute drill. So as football season starts, we see guys like J.C. Watts using their platform to raise millions of dollars for Harvey relief and recovery. And that leads me to an Aaron Rodgers cover story on ESPN. So Aaron Rodgers discusses his faith in this piece entitled The Search for Aaron Rodgers, Winning Isn't Everything. And that after the Super Bowl, Green Bay's hero QB has been on a journey to find out what is. Now, let's just take that for face value. If you were going to embark on a journey to find out what is, and you are one of the most well-known sports figures in the nation, you're literally riding high. You are literally, sort of recognized as a superhero to young boys across the country, and certainly to grown men who wish they were Aaron Rodgers. Okay, and so what does it say to us that a guy like Aaron Rodgers is still searching for meaning? And still searching for what really is? That should lead you to think about the book of Ecclesiastes. That should absolutely lead you to think about the rich young ruler who encounters Jesus and is like, what do I need to do to be saved? He clearly is a guy who, by the world standards, has it all. And yet he recognizes he does not, in fact, have it all. So if you were to read this very long form, extensive piece on ESPN by Mina Kimes, then you are going to find out that basically Aaron Rodgers has become a follower of another guy whose name is Rob Bell. And so Aaron Rodgers does not so much say that he has embraced Christ and that he's become a Christ follower, but he's definitely a disciple of Rob Bell. And I want you to consider for a moment what that means. What does it mean for us to become a disciple of a person who is not, in fact, the Christ? What does it mean to pattern our discipleship or our life after a person who may or may not be leading us into all truth? And so I want you to consider whose disciple you are. And I want you to consider whose life you are patterning your life after. And I want you to consider what it really means to be a disciple who's in whose life the life of Christ is replicated, and then turn and replicate the life of Christ in the life of another person. That's how discipleship is intended to work. And I want you to consider those kinds of things in your conversations with others as they are looking for what is out there. People are looking for truth. They're seeking truth and meaning and purpose, even if they have the world by the tail. All right, friends, this is The Reconnect, and I'm Carmen LaBurge. You can connect with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast, donate to the ministry, share today's show with someone new. That's literally all we got time for today. Have a great weekend and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.